One of the things most interesting to me personally is the idea of healing. How does healing happen? What causes it? What interferes with it? And so that's really what I want to be talking about today. In my work, the main modality that I'm involved in is the healing codes, although I use emotional freedom technique and the emotion code as well. And it is a key point that we know so little about healing. Previously on these calls, I've mentioned that back in, long time ago, when I was 16 years old, my mother told me, a registered nurse, that we know so little about healing. And the situation that prompted that conversation was when a friend of ours, much older than me, was diagnosed with cancer, went into surgery, opened up, and immediately closed up. The doctors thought there was no hope for this gentleman and closed him right up without any other treatment and sent him home to get his affairs in order and then die. It took him about 23 years to get around to that, and I saw him about 30 days after that surgery, and he looked terrific to me. And when I got home, I asked my mother the question, what happened? Why does he look so good? And that's when she made the statement, we know so little about healing. And so I wonder about this pretty frequently, and it's something that I journal about. And from the standpoint of the healing codes, there's a standard process. And the first order of business when you do a healing codes is you say a prayer or a request. So praying and requesting is, I would say, a needed element in prayer. So needed why? I think because when we pray, when we request something, we are literally opening ourselves up to possibilities. And in this case, we're opening our minds and our hearts to healing. So if we're asking for something, clearly we've got to have some sort of belief that it exists, that that possibility of healing exists. So we ask for healing, we open our hearts and minds. That, I believe, is fantastic. And as we do the healing codes, we literally put our attention, we use the phrase truth focus statement, it's not an affirmation, but it is an idealized concept of the condition that we do want to experience. So that says, as we put our attention on what we want, we are creating a thought form, a consciousness form. We are adding our energy into this yet-to-be-seen structure, and over time, as we continue to add energy to it, it becomes denser and denser and denser until it shows up in physical reality. So that idea of having a vision or an image or an idea of what we do want to be experiencing, not what we want to fight, not what we want to battle, not what we want to get rid of, but what we do want to be experiencing in our lives is a very important idea. It seems to me that as we are saying a prayer or a request, we're saying it of what? For some people, we're saying it of to our God, our creator, divine consciousness, however we happen to label that creative power, and I would define that creative with a capital C and a capital P, creative power, or we're talking to our subconscious minds, and or we're talking to our bodies, and or we're talking to our conscious minds. As we speak this stuff aloud, we are broadcasting vibrations, sound waves, to ourselves. Sound is a powerful tool when it comes to transferring information. And we do want to transfer information to the cells of our body, certainly. So instead of doing what cells do when illness is the overriding image, they'll do what cells do when health is the overriding image. I think this idea of turning to some source, some force, some power to ask for help, to ask for the fulfillment of our needs makes perfect sense. We've been doing that, whether we've been asking for it verbally, or we've certainly been asking for it energetically since conception, and from a physical standpoint, we'll be doing that until we physically die. So wanting to access energy from some force is a natural and effective part of this process. I think that when we start to believe that healing comes from someplace other than the source, and I capitalize source, meaning God or whatever power, that label that is most comfortable for you. Some people around the planet will use Jehovah, Yahweh, Allah, infinite spirit, supreme being, great spirit, infinite intelligence. But I think we're talking about this fundamental force that is responsible for all creation. So when we think that healing comes from someplace other than the source of all things, that's a little confusing. That seems a little odd. And by using such a modality as the healing codes that is seeking connection to the source of all healing, makes healing much easier to achieve. Now, there is, in a lot of modalities, this is true, there are some minor variations of it, but we are directing in the healing codes healing energy using our fingertips into the healing centers. But before we even do that, we are utilizing our attention and our intention and our beliefs. If we didn't have some level of belief, we wouldn't even be doing the process. We would have resigned ourselves that either this process is not going to work and consequently we're going to seek help elsewhere. But because we do, we're going to be going through this process. I think there's an aspect of the physical activity, not only in the healing codes, but in emotional freedom technique and others, that this physical activity occupies the conscious mind. It literally is gives us something to do, something to focus one aspect of our mind on, and I believe that when we do that, it's as if the mind now becomes occupied with doing this right and holding the hands this way and pointing the fingertips this way in this particular sequence. Other defense mechanisms that normally get activated when we are trying something new or we're dealing with something different or even dealing with something good, all of a sudden, because the mind is occupied with this particular physical behavior, the force field, if you will, the defense mechanism against new and change and different is reduced. And consequently, this energy is allowed to penetrate us. We're able to access it more than we could under normal circumstances when we're our regular human consciousness, perhaps ego-driven selves. I got to do it all on my own. That's a very easy place to get to, not that effective in a lot of ways. Another aspect of the healing codes is the truth focus statement. And a truth focus statement, normally looked at by people as a string of words, several phrases or a sentence or so, that they think they need to repeat over and over and over again. That's not accurate. It's never been accurate in terms of the healing codes. It's not an affirmation. You're not trying to convince yourself of anything. You're not trying to brainwash yourself. What we're trying to do in these cases is to establish this idealized condition that I talked about earlier. Now, the way to do that is to not just words, not just lip service, not just noise, but in fact the words that lead to the images, that lead to the vibrations, that lead to the thoughts, the feelings, and so on, sounds, other senses, that will give greater sense or structure to the condition that we want to create. We improve the vibrational frequencies of this idealized condition by giving energy to these various aspects of it. When we're stuck with thinking only of the what of the ideal condition, that is, what that condition is, I think we're much better off a lot of ways than when we think of how is this possible, how am I going to do it, when is it going to happen, where is it going to happen, who's involved in it, why is it going to happen, why hasn't it happened before. All of that other questioning really raises the doubts, gets the ego very involved, gets our human consciousness going, and we just complicate the matter. If we say what we want, positively expect it, all kinds of things can occur. It's when we think we are the source of healing, when we are the creators of the healing, when we cause it, be it by our mental activity, our physical activity, our emotional activity, I think we start to short-circuit ourselves. Healing is a lot easier to occur and to allow into our experiences when we just declare what it is, that is, define it, determine what we want to experience, and then believe in it to whatever level we can, and then positively expect it. Those states, belief and positive expectancy, are easier to achieve than what kind of skills do I have to develop in order for me to heal myself. And bottom line, when it comes to physiological behaviors or activities in the body, there are so few that we even have a rudimentary grasp of in terms of growing a fingernail or hair or digesting a sandwich or other minor things, way, way too complicated for the conscious mind to be able to deal with. I would say that healing occurs in proportion to and as a direct result of us allowing the natural flow of life force to us and through us. Now, many of us say, including myself, that the body heals itself. I think there's another way to look at that that may be even more accurate. That is, the body heals itself according to the amount of life force that we allow to flow to it and through it. The design of the body is to heal and to grow and to develop, and it is this life force that's coming to it and through it that makes that happen. Another way to look at that life force, in other words, divine consciousness or spirit or God, really is the building material used for everything that we see in physical form, including the creation of our healthy bodies, our safe homes, our fulfilled needs, and on and on. It is this energy is responsible for that. It will deliver that to us. In terms of illness, it's easy enough to describe stress as the culprit and relaxation as the goal. We do that. That's the language we use fairly frequently in the healing codes. We could also say that a signal is interpreted as a threat, some environmental signal, some sight, some sound, some feeling, some sense, some smell, some touch, some taste, is interpreted as a threat, which then triggers our human consciousness to erect a defensive force field, a shield, to, quote, protect us. And it is almost as if, now I have a military background, so I see things like this, but you don't have to have a military background to be able to relate to it, I don't believe. You could turn around and notice that the wars going on all over the planet, a couple of them we're involved in, having started them both, is that you could say that our defenses are under the command of an ego-centric general. And that's all they know is their strategy. This egoic general is going to dictate who and what the enemy is, and the strategy to neutralize the threat that it perceived. That is, it's either going to do that by fighting what it perceived to be the threat, or by running away from it. Illness can result from the blocking of life force. I think that pretty much we've got to recognize that that's what is going on. That makes total sense to me. So illness is a result of the blocking of the life force by that force field and the erroneous thinking to what the solution to a problem was. If we say, wait a minute, killing the declared enemy is the solution to a problem. That's the fight that I was referring to a moment ago. That's the way to deal with a threat. Kill it. Kill it. Disempower that threat. And we use all kinds of forms of disempowerment in order to invoke or activate this particular strategy. We use laws and prisons and jails and wars and on to do this. But we could say that killing the declared enemy really doesn't work. In terms of terrorism, we have a war on terrorism and have for maybe a dozen years, maybe even longer, but it's been declared certainly for the last 10 or so years. We could say there are more terrorists now than before the war began. So killing the declared enemy has caused more enemies to appear. Not much of an effective strategy. And it's never really worked long term throughout history. And you can kind of look at the world's conditions right now. Look at the conflicts between people, between ethnic groups, between races, between colors, between religions, between countries. You go, that's been going on for a while. Sure it has. Sure it has. I tend to be antagonistic to the medical pharmaceutical industry in some ways. And if you look at this killing the declared enemy, you can pretty much see that, wait a minute, isn't that what chemo and radiation, isn't that what a lot of pharmaceutical drugs are really devoted to? Chemo and radiation. Instead of labeling them as treatments, I would say we could label those as strategies of destruction. Now, can you imagine this term being used in a doctor's office or a hospital room, and the doctor is now going to explain to the patient that a strategy of destruction is going to be embarked upon? It's like, whoa, that doesn't sound like a good marketing scheme, right? Because one of the first questions that patient would ask is, well, strategy of destruction. What else is going to be destroyed in my body by this strategy? And if the doctors were to tell the truth to the patients about that, many patients would say, you know what, I don't want to take this approach. There's got to be a different approach that makes more sense to me and the cells of my body than trying to destroy a declared enemy. Because there is going to be, in this case, much like bombing in Iraq or anywhere else for that matter, there is going to be a huge amount of collateral damage to the point where, over the course of every single year in the United States, documented by the medical establishment, AMA, and other researchers, that between 400 to 700,000 to a million people every year are killed in the United States alone by mishaps using medicines, surgical or medical procedures, or by hospital care and things going wrong. And these things are often labeled, even though they made it into these studies, labeled as complications arising out of a disease or a physical condition. When a person dies of a drug overdose in a hospital, it's a complication resulting from their condition. When they die on the operating table of something done ineffectively, it is a complication due to their medical condition. In a lot of ways in the United States, and this is no mistake, a way to give credibility to themselves as an industry, as a business, is to elevate the respect and the authority that they have in order to bolster their reputation and livelihood. And this is the medical and pharmaceutical industry. About 100 or 110 years ago or so, it was recognized that the medical profession was held in low esteem. And so this whole kind of development of how do we elevate ourselves? How do we elevate ourselves so what we say becomes almost like a command or a commandment? If we can elevate ourselves to put ourselves on pedestals, if we can elevate ourselves to the status of a god, what could be better as a business than that? And so, to a large extent, the medical pharmaceutical industries have usurped the role of God. And because of those statistics, up to 1 million people in the U.S. alone die at their hands, you could say they're not doing a really great job at it. Worse yet, they have led people away from their source with promises of less responsibility, less effort, less discipline, and quicker self-gratification. Take a couple of pills, call me in the morning. You don't have to make any changes to your thinking, your believing, your feeling, or your behaviors. This is it. And the monetary costs are minimized. That's kind of pushed off, but we can recognize that the United States has the highest cost of health care in the world, and so few people in the United States are actually covered by health care. And the quality relative to other countries in studies have shown us that we're pretty far down the list in terms of quality. And, of course, we overlook almost entirely the cost of the unwanted effects of the drugs, the surgeries, the complications, the things go wrong, and so on. There's a common phrase used in the pharmaceutical industry when it's talking and promoting itself. They talk about side effects. But most people recognize that they're not side effects. They're effects. The word side was interjected here because it represents an attempt to hide, the hide effects. So you have this whole role or whole spectrum, this whole laundry list of effects. Some of them are desirable, some of them are not, but they're all effects. But however, the idea that they can label some of them side effects, those are the unwanted, we don't want you to notice, don't put your attention on them, can we move them off to the side so you don't really see them or focus on them, and we'll tell you about the really, really good stuff that you can expect from taking this drug. And so that small print, that rapid talk at the end of an advertisement, for instance, are the effects that they're trying to make you not notice, kind of like three-card Monty. Don't notice, it's not there, you're not going to see it. Hiding the truth doesn't help us heal. It doesn't help us heal. Even though I don't really fully understand or grasp the word consciousness, it's bandied around. It's talked about consciousness. Some people believe, and I've come to this belief myself, that consciousness is a word that encompasses God. God is consciousness. So this force that is God could be labeled divine consciousness, infinite consciousness. And it's just this force that has a knowing, has an intention, has a purpose, and is seeking to express in a given way. That sounds exciting to me, to think of God like that, as compared to the childhood version of a God with a in this case, because I'm Caucasian, it would be a white guy up on a cloud with a white beard and white hair with a scepter, almost kind of like the Greek mythology thing going on here, fickle, punitive, sometimes loving, sometimes not, kind of a anthropomorphic figure. But that doesn't really work for me any longer, and hasn't for a long, long time. And so to be able to consider that this energy that has a knowingness is seeking to supply us with life, and in fact, this consciousness is the cause of existence, and it is the evidence of existence. That's exciting. And the fact is that if this consciousness is responsible for all creation, the stuff we can see and the stuff we can't see, then we are extensions of this consciousness. I like that. We fit into that framework. If I think of us human beings as points of consciousness in this huge field of divine consciousness, we're points of consciousness that we're self-aware, we're self-conscious, we think of ourselves and we think of other things, and we consider ourselves and we see other things as individualized forms of consciousness, and the ones that are solid, like this lampshade I'm tapping on with one hand, that's solid, the lamp is solid, and so on. I can see that, those individualized forms that are visible to us. I think we have amazing abilities of placing our attention on anything at all and using our intention to translate consciousness as we will. We can look at a picture. I'm looking at one now, and I'm putting my attention on it. I am connected to it, and now I can translate that picture any way I want. I can look at it, and so light is being reflected off, going into my eye and being processed by my brain, and I recognize what this is because of practice. I know what a picture looks like. I know what a picture frame looks like. I know what a wall looks like, which is what this picture is hanging on. So I know how to interpret. I've learned, I've been taught how to interpret these environmental signals. And I can interpret and then translate these environmental signals beyond looking at the picture. I can interpret them and translate them and transmute them and transform them into good feelings. Or I could also, just by making a choice, translate the environmental signals in not good feelings. I use my consciousness to look at that picture and either make myself feel good or make myself feel bad. I do it as a result of my own consciousness. In the Christ letters that I have become increasingly fond of, although from the first time I began reading, I was incredibly fond of them. This is the title of the book that these letters are now encompassed in, is Christ Returns, Speaks His Truth. So in the Christ letters, he describes in letter number one that the truth of existence contains certain attributes, and healing is one of them. It's a part of our existence. It is natural. It will occur if we don't interfere with it. So how does healing happen? It happens because it's been designed to happen. How does healing not happen? It doesn't happen when we interfere with it. That's pretty interesting. Said another way, healing is an attribute of this spiritual field of divine consciousness that we call God, in which we're an extension. Healing is an attribute of us. I normally describe the sequence of creation as moving from the spiritual to the mental to the emotional to the physical. And you can easily notice that there's an increasing density. The lightest of all is the spiritual, least dense, of course, and moving to thoughts, which we can perceive, to emotions, which are much more noticeable, and then to the physical reality or physical manifestation. When that occurrence becomes evident, we're dealing with the most dense of those four stages. My opinion is that when we have a physicalized, that is, a demonstrable illness, we've done two things. One, we have interfered and prevented a natural process from occurring. Two, we've distorted consciousness by our thinking, feeling, and behaviors to produce this physical condition. It didn't happen. We were instrumental in its causation. Now, a lot of people are going to be upset by the idea that they themselves are responsible for their conditions. I've heard this from people and I've read this. They'll say, it's unfair to blame the victim. It's unfair to blame the victim. Assigning responsibility is not the same as blaming. Blaming doesn't really serve. Assigning responsibility has a different thing, has a different value. Assigning responsibility and causation, instead of being interpreted as blame, tells us we can make changes to this condition if we will grasp the responsibility. It's like if we'll take hold of the wheel and direct our thinking, we can change our direction and we can arrive at a different condition. And I think this idea that people very, very frequently interpret the word responsibility as blame and as fault speaks a lot about previous experiences and also about victimhood. Personally, I no longer believe there are victims. I believe there are no victims, only volunteers. And people volunteer energetically through the thoughts we think, the beliefs we hold, and the feelings we feel, and the actions we take and don't take. If we're not instrumental in this distortion of consciousness that results in illness, then it must be created by a god. That's the alternative. This is the old superstition that God punishes people with diseases. Oh, why, God, why did you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? I think that fear-laden superstition is very prevalent in people who profess and embrace the idea about being part of the God-fearing population. If, as Christ says in the Christ letters, and as I, before the letters, came to the conclusion, God can only be capable of good. The stuff that appears to be not good is not God's doing. It's not God's doing. It's human doing. Humans are behind that. And I think as that's noodled a little bit, well, for me personally, it's hard to arrive at any other conclusion. I think one of the impetuses, or if not a root of the problem, how we prevent or interfere with healing, is when we listen to others who would teach or preach that we should be afraid of this God of love. And if this is a God of love who is punitive and just and vengeful and wrathful, you go, sounds either mighty human or as if God has multiple personalities. I think that doesn't hold up to the least bit of consideration. And I would suggest that if your God punishes people with afflictions and diseases and pain and suffering, you might want to upgrade your beliefs about God. On the other hand, if healing naturally comes from the divine, illness must come from interfering with the divine. When we follow this line of reasoning, I think we can come up with a couple of points. Number one, healing is natural and comes from the divine consciousness of which we are a part. Two, illness is the physical result of interfering with the presence of this divine flow in our lives. Which takes us to a fork in the road, where we get to choose our strategy how to deal with the situation. Let's assume we're experiencing what is diagnosed as an illness. We are now faced with this choice. We can focus on treating the physical conditions with physical means. Now, clearly, this is a popular approach for several reasons, one of which, it's really profitable to the purveyors of the physical means. And, again, no industry is more powerful or profitable in the United States than the medical pharmaceutical industry. The second point is that it helps people give away their personal power, which, again, they associate with responsibility, which they associate with blame and fault and being found guilty. And third point is, even though it's often ineffective, 700,000 to a million people dying from it, yeah, I would say that's ineffective, these medical treatments seem to be, and they're promised to be, faster and easier. Like kind of like fast food, except fast medicine is poisonous. Pharmaceuticals are kept behind the counter for a couple of reasons. Maintain profit margins, and because they are dangerous. But there's another fork in this road that we could choose, we could look at. That one is that one fork takes us to the source of all healing, and that's the place we might want to go. Changing the way we think, feel, and act with regard to the divine's healing attribute seems to me to be the better way. That path is the better way. Frankly, you don't have to go to a drugstore or a hospital or a doctor's office. It is constantly available to us 24/7, every day of the year, every year. To realize that illness on a physical level, poverty, which is illness on a financial level, and suffering, which is illness on an emotional level in whatever regard, are all distortions of our relationship with the divine. And this indicates to me that we ought to connect to the divine, maybe trying different ways than the way we currently have been doing it, which resulted in the problems that we're experiencing. So how do we heal? We connect to the source of all healing. So how do we connect to the source of all healing? We put our attention on the divine consciousness, and that is the same divine consciousness which we're an extension of, was referred to as the Father working through us. Now, Christ in the Bible is indicated as having said, is the Father working through me, but he says this is possible for us too, and even greater things. So the Father working through us, the Christ within, or whatever image works best for you in order to make this power that is contained within you and within me and within each of us as more and more real and believable and accessible. And we also can heal as we intend to understand and experience the divine consciousness. Remember the days of old when we had to manually adjust the antennas on top of the television sets to improve the reception of a TV program and the signals? We'd like, adjust that antenna to minimize the static and improve the reception of the signals. That static and interference goes on in our days all day long. And when you think of it, and no pun intended there, that chattering mind, referred to by some as the monkey mind, always busy, that static interferes with our receptivity to the signals of divine consciousness. We've all heard that expressed as that still, small voice. That is, it is this vibration below the static where we want to pay attention. That's where the information that helps us heal resides. Meditation and prayer quiet the mind from the concern with the circumstances in the physical reality. So instead of accessing all that static in our environment, all the physical reality that now has manifested, is just be able to delve deeper into the spiritual reality from which all other realities have sprung forth. That's another aspect of the healing codes, as we're quiet and going through this process, that mind is busy with the hand motions and other things, but now all of a sudden the connection to our source is widened. It's almost as if we've established a pipeline, or it's always existed, but we open the flow, the valve. This idea of healing, certainly in the United States, when we talk about the healthcare programs and such, vigorous battles are going on about health insurance. It's not actually health insurance. It's sickness insurance is really the name of it. It's not healthcare program. It's sickness care program, because people, when they're sick, they go to get care. So I think sick care is more realistic. And if we could look at the source of healing and conceive of that as being someplace other than a doctor's office or a hospital or some chemical or some other behavior designed to give us relief, to include smoking and drinking and workaholism and any number of behaviors, we're going to be in a much better place in order to avail ourselves of our natural birthright. Healing occurs when we recognize that it belongs to us. This is how healing happens. One, we allow it. Two, we believe it will occur. We expect it to occur. We stop interfering with the natural flow of God's healing spirit. We go to the source of all healing and ask for it. We are grateful for the healing spirit with which we've been reconnected. And God, our bodies, and our thoughts, our own consciousness, all aligned to produce this birthright healing. I would like to end this service with a prayer. And instead of improvising my own prayer, as I do, what I'd like to do is modify just slightly the prayer that Jesus recommends before meditation in letter 8, page 24. He puts it into a personalized form for an individual to read and memorize, and I'm going to try to modify that to be inclusive of you and me. Father, Mother, Life, you are my life. You are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the truth, true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall fully be illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us from within, perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive mind and heart. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you, and it is so.